Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This week in PlayStation, we're talking about the return of the demo, Synapse on PlayStation VR 2, and our 15 most anticipated PS5 games. We'll have all this and more because this is PSI Love You XOXO. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. That's Blessing. That's Janet. I'm Greg. And you can get each and every episode of PS I Love You XOXO over on patreon.com/kindoffunny. There you can watch us record it live, just like CJ Splitson is, who says, I hope my first live recording isn't just going to be the trial stuff. We don't want to hear it. We're sick of hearing about Jim Ryan's goddamn emails just saying it was king or it was this many hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't care. Let's talk about some games, Blessing.
Maybe Xbox should have bought an electric car instead. You know?
Grinning like the Cheshire Cat. These are deep cut references to the news that's been happening on Games Daily. I digress. You could also get it ad-free and get dozens of monthly episodes of exclusive content only on patreon.com/kindoffunny. If you have no bucks to toss our way, no big deal. Of course, you can support us on the Epic Game Store, Fortnite, Rocket League, or Fall Guys with the creator code kindoffunny. You can get PSI Love You XOXO for free with ads and without the exclusive content on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Casey Andrew, Delaney Twining, James Hastings. Today we're brought to you by BetterHelp. But let's start with a PSN message from you. Janet, are you hanging in there? You have officially moved. I was heartened to see someone respond to last week's episode saying, yes, I am that person moving and listening to this show. How are you?
I have been better, but I'm on my way up, so that's good. I've set up the space. The funny thing about being here is, I have a duo stream setup that I'm working on getting together. Like, just got like mics and headsets for it and all that stuff, and that's gonna be fun and fine. But this background looks basically the same, so it really just looks like I got rid of the mirror and they just put a wall there.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's not a lot of visual payoff if you're watching the video version, but I no longer live next to the world's loudest dog, so that's exciting. Good. And it's cool getting the space together, but every day I go out and it's just like, oh man, like as I make more progress, there's still so much left to do. And I'm scared at this point to be hopeful because like every few days I've been like, you know, in a few days, like we're gonna hit this milestone and everything has always taken so much longer. I really wanna say that I'll be done after this weekend, but I'm afraid to hope. You know what I mean? But we're on the way up. We got the consoles hooked up. I could theoretically play video games. I was going to ask you.
Yeah, how have you been able to play anything?
No, I lied last week. I was like, oh, I'm going to come in. I'm like, I moved on like Saturday, and I'm like, okay, Saturday we move. Like Sunday, Monday, I like do the whole apartment. Tuesday, I play some games. I'm like, plenty of time for PS Love You. No, God, I've had like no time. I mean, I could force time, but then it just would be like, do you want to just play a game instead of work on 8 million other things? So yeah, but this week for real, though. It's the second for real, which is the most serious statement I can give you and the audience.
That's correct. That is the second most for real you can give it. Skywalk Up writes in to kindoffunny.com/PSILY, just like you can, to be part of the show with a PSN message thought starter, and says, how cool have all the free demo options been for PlayStation 5 this month? I went from not knowing what I was going to do between Zelda and Armored Core when suddenly I found Final Fantasy 16 is awesome. This viewfinder game is sick as hell. The lies of P is not lying about being good as Souls, being a good Souls like. Suddenly the walls are closing in. I am playing Final Fantasy 16 like a madman, and my wallet is sweating at the incoming damage from game purchases. I know demos are like this right now due to SGF, but I wish demos were available more often and not paywall behind the Omega Premium Super PlayStation Plus tier. Blessing, how awesome is it that we're getting all these demos?
I think it's super awesome. Yeah, I got to check out the Liza P demo, and when I first played it, I got about halfway and was like, all right, I'm going to stop there because I'm enjoying this so much that I want to save my experience of the full game. And I talked about that on the show. And then as soon as I got home, I booted up Liza P and I played the rest of the demo because it's a really good demo. And I was thinking about it all the time and I couldn't stay away from it. Yeah, demos are awesome. I'm right there with Skywalkup that... Yeah, like when you check out a game and it's only, oh yeah, I got an hour to spare. I got 30 minutes to spare. Let me check this thing out. And it surprises you. It's such a delight, right? And that's what happens, I think, most of the time when it comes to demos like this, where the Final Fantasy 16 demo went up and interest skyrocketed, which was really cool to see because, like, we talked about it earlier this week that sales for Final Fantasy 16 are really, really good.
Final Fantasy 16 sold 3 million copies during launch week. This is George Yang at IGN.com. Final Fantasy 16 has sold over 3 million copies during its first week on sale, Square Enix has announced. Square Enix said the milestone consisted of both physical and digital sales on PlayStation 5. Physical sales for the game in the UK were reportedly 74% lower than those of its predecessor, Final Fantasy 15. Still, Final Fantasy 16 was still on top of the overall sales during its thing. The solid sales numbers should be considered with a caveat. It's only available on PS5 right now. Final Fantasy 7 Remake shifted 3.5 million copies in the first 3 days when it launched as a PlayStation 4 exclusive in April 2020, but that was a much larger install base than the PS5 currently enjoys.
Yeah, and I think you saw that those sales up front skyrocket even more because... Yeah, that demo drove a lot of interest for 100%. A game that I think for a Final Fantasy didn't see as much like, you know, people going crazy about it until that demo came out and everybody was going crazy about it. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing. I think Steam Next Fest is also, you know, driving that as well, right, as part of SGF. And so with that, you got a lot of indie games putting out demos, too. And it's cool to see Viewfinder come out and be a hit in the demo space. And I've been staying away from it because I want that to be fresh. And I trust all the word of mouth I've been hearing about it. The one demo I will say that I tried out and was a little bit let down by was Eternites, which is a game that was announced last year at a State of Play. It was a very Persona-looking game, right? Really cool art style. I believe it's a single dev, or at least like it's led by a single dude, right? Or not that he's single, but they're single. But you get what I mean, right?
Let's see how further can you sink in the quicksand as you fight against it.
I don't know.
Let me get on their relationship status page.
Yeah, but his whole story is that he played Persona 5, got really inspired by it, you know, left to do his own thing, and wanted to make his own Persona type game. And from playing it, you know, I think so many of the ideas are there. I really dig the art style. I really dig the energy of it, but then, you know, controlling it and ride it, the controlling it and the riding aspects of it immediately didn't hit me. And it's that question of, all right, is it the demo? Like, is this indicative of the full game? Or, you know, is this just the experience of getting a bite-sized version of this thing, right? And so it can work both ways, but I think either way, it's great for me as a consumer. The fact that I get to experience a thing and then make the choice on whether or not I want to actually purchase it. And I think for the most part, it does good for the developer, right? Because I think you're going to sell more units that way.
Janet, are you feeling the demos? Are you excited for them? Are you happy they're back?
I'm glad to see them in this space. Admittedly, kind of like Blessing's point with Viewfinder, depending on the size of the game and if I already know about it, I'm a little less inclined to do a demo. I do agree with this write-in saying that it'd be nice if it wasn't locked to the highest tier of PlayStation Plus. When they announced that, I thought that was kind of a big L from both sides. Like, obviously, the only plus is that it, you know, bolsters the appeal of that tier, which we've already talked about, is kind of a niche tier. So it sort of like tosses in like a mass market thing. Like, hey, like, even if you don't like old games, you probably like demos. So here's something that, you know, we can offer you. But holistically, I love demos as kind of what this person mentions, right? A try before you buy, a give it a shot without having any worries. Just being able to jump in like that is really beneficial. And I'd love to see from the console space, bigger variety and more festivities around that demo kind of season. Like, I feel like we're kind of calling this out as like a demo moment for PlayStation, but like Blessing pointed out, Steam Next Fest has been killing it like every couple of months. Like, one drops or like every whatever quarter. I'm not sure because I haven't.
One just ended.
Yeah. But there was one at the beginning of the year too, or was it maybe the same one last year? It's all blending together because I did one of them. Yeah, there was one like not too long ago because that's where I like played a bunch of games, and they have like they have them pretty often. Mm-hmm. And I finally dug into that, though not this one, but the past one. I played for like, I don't know, 6 or 12 hours or something, just going through a bunch of demos. And I found so many games that I genuinely became interested, followed the marketing up, and now I'm going to finally play the full version. And I really like that as a broader taste-making moment for consumers. The reason I don't go as much to the console stuff is because usually it's a game that I already kind of like know about, versus like Steam Next Fest, I can go really in the weeds and be like, you know what? I've vaguely heard of Tray Racers. Let me play this. Or like, oh, this is a game where it's like a murder mystery thing. Yeah, sure. Let me queue this up and just sort of run through them. I think it also kind of adds that, you know, I'd love the idea of this more directly coinciding with other stuff we have going on in the main gaming space in terms of events. Like, this sure. calls out like SGF as being kind of a thing, but there being people always talk about like the consumer facing version of things like E3 and like these other trade shows. I feel like having that digital offering would be so beneficial, not just to players, but also maybe smaller content creators who might not be able to afford or get credentialed to go to this thing.
For sure.
They can still feel like they have that moment of coverage available to them as well.
My question would be, pulling from the PSN message and Sky walk up, is I know the demos right. I know demos are like this right now due to SGF. I don't buy that. I don't think that's why you got a Lies of P demo. I don't think that's why you got a Final Fantasy 16 demo. I think you got them because marketing is smart, and if you can get out there and get ahead of the message, you know, Final Fantasy 16. What I think you said, or maybe it was Tim today, was the idea that there wasn't as much hullabaloo leading up to Final Fantasy 16 until that demo dropped, because people have an idea of what a Final Fantasy is in their head. And so you can hear a preview, you can read a preview, you can whatever. But if you're a Final Fantasy, or if you're a non-Final Fantasy convert, right, if you don't care about it, you're not looking at that, reading that. So to be able to drop a free demo and say, no, this is awesome, that's what leads to 3 million sales that quickly. For Lies of P, hey, not only are we a Souls-like, we think we're one of the better Souls-like. We're you know, can compete in a way that others can't. You can say that as much as you want, but everybody has said that. You drop a demo that can get somebody like Andy on stream playing it nonstop and be like, holy shit, this is actually good. That goes a long way. And even to reach further back, right? Like, Octopath Traveler 2 drops a demo and the save progress carries over to the main thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't go as far to say we are in a renaissance for demos, but I do think in an industry, and specifically a year, so crowded, so jam-packed with amazing titles week after week, people are seeing the value in coming out and going like, you know what, we got to get this in front of people. And I do think, to Janet's point, Steam Next Fest is a different beast. I would love to see that on PlayStation. I would love to see, you know, they've been doing things with like, you know, Shuhei's curated list of games you should pre-order, or wish list, or whatever. I would love it if they got so in the weeds of that, of like, hey, we are doing PlayStation September, and all these 2024 games are going to have demos. Then it would be the things that they made for SGF, we're just putting on the network for you to play. That would be fantastic. Mm. But I don't think this is SGF related as much as it is a bunch of games that are coming out that are good and need to spread the word that they are good.
Yeah. I would say Steam Next Fest is the one thing I would say is maybe adjacent to SGF, but I think it would exist regardless of SGF's existence or not, right? Like, I think the timing just works out that way, especially because developers are coming out and talking about their games right now specifically. But yeah, like, I would love to see that extend to Xbox and PlayStation. I think the thing with Steam is that Steam is where you see so many indie developers put out their games, at least first, because that is in a more accessible / approachable platform to develop for if you're an indie developer, right? And so, like, looking through the list of, I'm on PC Gamer, and they're talking about the best demos of Steam Next Fest, right? And they list games like Sticky Business, Stray Gods, Astria, Viewfinder, Steam World Build, Gord, etc., right? Little Kitty Big City. And man, like, how many of those games are coming out to PlayStation, right? How many of them are coming out to Xbox? How many of them are coming out to Switch? The fact that all of them are coming out on PC, right, makes Steam the perfect place to do something like that. I'm sure PlayStation could, but it might have to be different or on a smaller scale. I have to focus in on the indies that PlayStation likes to hail, or maybe they expand that program and hail up more indies, right? Like, I think there's something there, and I would love to see that on the PlayStation side of things.
Also, really quick, I looked it up. Steam Next Fest happens 3 times a year. So, there you go.
Let's move on to topic of the show. Again, I don't care about Jim Ryan's email, all right? Mm. There's lots of gossip in there, but I'm sick of talking about it. Mm. And it's all Xbox news anyway, so who cares? Instead, we want to look forward to the rest of this year. Believe it or not, we are almost done with half of the year. Soon it will be July. We'll be in the second half of the year.
Oh, firmly. God.
Dude, it gets worse.
It's flying by.
We had an all-hands meeting yesterday, and we were going through stuff, and somebody mentioned that, oh, in 2 weeks, this is happening, blah, blah. And I turned around to Roger, and I go, in 2 weeks, it'll be the middle of July.
Jesus.
Like, it'll be July 15th on that Friday or whatever it is. And he was like, oh, my God. Like, that's how fast the year is going. So we thought, why not look ahead and talk about our most anticipated PlayStation 5 games of 2023? And I know what you're going to say, ladies and gentlemen. Greg, we've heard you on PS I Love You talk about this before. We've seen you guys do top lists and all that stuff. So we decided to make it a bit spicy as we like to. And topless? Instead of just saying, hey, let's each... What?
It sounded like you said topless. We've seen you guys do top. We've definitely seen Greg do topless.
We said rather than each of us just go through, pick five games. Everybody picks Spider-Man 2. So that, but in the, no. We're doing it where we each have to have five unique games, and not only five unique games. They need to fit into five categories. One game for each. So what we're looking for from each of us is one indie we're excited for the rest of the year. Mm. One exclusive we're excited for the rest of the year. One third-party game we're excited for the rest of the year. One game we're excited for, but more than excited, hopeful for. It makes us go, I want to play that if it works. We like that. And then, because this is the future of PlayStation, everybody, one multiplayer game. What is the multiplayer game you are excited for? These have to be from 2023. They have to be coming to PlayStation with the exception of the exclusive category. They don't have to be exclusive to PlayStation. That track, Bless?
Wait,
as the words come out of my mouth, you start going on.
For the, say that last part again, except for the exclusive.
With the exception of the exclusive category, they don't need to be exclusive to PlayStation 5.
Gotcha.
Okay, great.
Over.
So we will start with indie, ladies and gentlemen, the indie category. And I will say, Janet, as you are trapped among boxes, no tongs for bacon, what do you dream of playing in the indie variety in 2023?
I have a lot of dreams. I feel like I feel like every year is a freaking good time for indies. But you know, I hate to admit that I'm buying into the hype that Blessing laid down like back in January, but Cocoon. I'm excited for Cocoon. Which also, I want to do a correction too. When we talked about Cocoon after SGF, I had thought it wasn't a PlayStation game, but yeah, it's on PlayStation. Like, I don't know why.
Not only is it a PlayStation game, right before we went live with this, the release date was announced in the showcase for Annapurna, September 29th.
Yeah, this is a really awesome game. The sort of tagline or I think lead marketing thing that's hit a lot of people is like the from the creators of Inside Limbo thing, which for me always slices kind of funky where it's like, okay, but like, what does that really mean? Yeah. And are we resting on laurels in terms of like the clout of the name? But having played this at SGF, it was just so inherent and natural. I think that's where really I see the DNA of the design behind Inside in Limbo, where it's this... Don't ask any questions, just move and you'll sense it out. And I really love that about games, especially games that have like a light puzzle solving element to them. There's a lot of beauty and sort of over the top animations in the ways that you're sort of going in and out of realms between like what I'd kind of call her levels, right? Or areas of the game. And essentially you're like, like a little bug guy?
Yeah, you're a little bug. You're a robo bug because you're going to these robo worlds.
Little robo bug.
What I wrote down in my notes from SGF, right, was I'm freeing a robo bug question mark. Like that's what the narrative is.
And I like, you know, that sort of vague environmental storytelling mystery aspect, you know, where you like encounter like a large creature and you're like, is this like, you know, my parent, a god, a statue, like, you know, who's bad, you know, it kind of gives that vibe a little bit. And also the sound design. I've talked about it before, but the sound design of Cocoon was some of the best sound design I'd heard in a really long time and probably my favorite sound design from all of like what I played at SGF. Maybe like Alan Wake, maybe tied just because it's horror, but like the sound designer snapped on Cocoon. So I'm really excited about that one. And it was one that like, you know, Blessing had called it out back for Fantasy Critic. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. You kind of look at the trailer and you think, sure, I guess. But I think playing it, it just feels so... Like it clicks, you know exactly what you're doing. And then even when you don't know what you're doing, you have a general idea And it also does this thing where a lot of what you're doing is like picking up these little orbs and sort of moving them or manipulating like the environment to start like get a platform moving or like use this different ability. And it's a lot of just interacting with, I think, the different pieces of the environment. And that's what's really compelling. Like it has like a coziness to it. Yep. And I will say, just to close out, it doesn't have like the same spooky vibes as Limbo and Inside, in case that was maybe something that, you know, wasn't an appeal point for you or a concern. Like, I didn't really get horror vibes at all. It's just like, you're just a little guy in a little world walking around, and hopefully it stays that way. He doesn't get smooshed or something, but excited for that one.
What my notes start with, right, are nice color palette and then intuitive. Because it is that, I think, you know, I've talked about it a few times, and what the story I keep dragging out is like the first main boss, right, I kept dying at, and Greg Rice was like, so close. And I'm like, ah, stop saying stuff behind me. But before all that, it is the idea of, yeah, you're dropped in this. What do? You start exploring a little bit. Oh, okay, you figure it out. Okay, you get this orb, and it makes the hard light paths for you to move on. Great. But then you get to the next world, and you're like, oh, there's so many aha moments. Of, oh, I see, I put the orb down and I went in it, but if I take it off and put it back and then get the other orb, then I got to bring the orb into the orb and all these different things, that then you're unlocking a new power, a new little machine that you then have to bring to the next world when you thought you were leaving behind, and all these little, it adds on itself with its systems and levels.
Yeah, what you're talking about right now, right, is the exact thing that I think I was missing out of Somerville when that came out fall. You know, because both these games are games that are coming from people that worked at Playdead previously, right, are taking that talent and bringing that forward into making their separate games. And, you know, Janet, you talk about the sound design, you talk about the visuals, all this stuff. That's stuff that I love about Inside, right? That's stuff that, you know, when I think about Inside, I think about the atmosphere. I think about the vibes. I think about how every piece of that game feels so meticulously designed. And I think Somerville had a lot of that, especially in the visuals and in the audio, right? But I think for me, where Somerville was lacking and what didn't elevate Somerville to that 5 out of 5 status that I would give to a Inside or a Limbo was that intuitiveness where, you know, you go to a puzzle element, you interact with it, and it behaves exactly how it's supposed to behave.
Yeah.
Every single thing feels like
sense.
It makes sense. Everything feels like it has an animation that is tailored for the exact action that you want to do or want to try to do. From what I'm hearing about Cocoon, one, it seems like they're nailing all that stuff from the audio visual side, which is exactly what I want to hear. When I look at the trailer, when I look at the gameplay of it, when you go between the dimensions or phase out of an orb or do it, like, every action looks really cool visually in the animation. But yeah, hearing you guys talk about how intuitive it is, that is exactly what a game like this needs in order to hit that level that you want from something that is coming from people that previously brought games from Playdead.
How confident are you feeling then, coming off of SGF? It's, you know, the most anticipated, as voted by all the SGF judges, most anticipated indie, to then look over at kindoffunny.com/KF League 2023, which is our fantasy league, us versus the XCast, where, let's just be honest, it's really us versus each other.
Yeah.
PS I Love is going to win this hands down. But you do have Cocoon on your team, Blessing, and it's counterpicked by Mike.
I know.
Meaning that if this delivers on the scores you're expecting, you will also totally sink Snowbike Mike.
Yeah. No, that's one of my high up contenders. I'm looking at that. I'm looking at, you know, maybe Hollow Knight Silk Song comes out this year.
No.
Maybe.
Get
please, please, God, release it this year. But yeah, like, those are the two. And Sea of Stars as well, right? I think this year there's so much indie talent when you're talking about games that look like heavy hitters in different genres. You know, we're talking about games like Viewfinder as well, of like, these games look so special. Yeah, I think right now there's never been a better time to be a gamer, Greg. Especially for indie games.
You think it's the best year of gaming?
I think it's possible.
I think it is too.
Something.
Let's continue that going then. So let's talk about what could continue the best year of gaming possible with you, Blessing. What indie are you looking forward to for the rest of the year?
The Plucky Squire.
Of course.
This is one that I think could speak to any of us. You know, it's that kind of game where when you watch the trailer, no matter who you are, I can't imagine anybody watching this trailer and going,
I don't even try that.
That's not for me, right? Like, this looks cool to anybody that sees this trailer. The animation looks clean. It's bright. It's colorful. High contrast. It's a fun art style. But then when you get the transition from going to this 2D storybook style into this 3D 3D platformer style gameplay, and that looks really cool as well, I'm all about that. It looks like it's taking really cool ideas from games like Link Between Worlds, really, really unique gameplay setup. And then, yeah, like, you see all the different like art styles you're messing with here in terms of your character going into the wall and then now they're in this like coloring book style and they hop out and they're in a different thing, right?
I mean, it's incredible to look at.
Yeah.
That was my thing where I had missed the initial reveal or didn't remember it. And when people were like, oh, Plucky Squire, I was like, okay, whatever. And then seeing that trailer at whatever last showcase it was at, I was like, oh shit. Okay, no, I can totally see why people are stoked about this.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be this year's Tinykin in terms of appeal, praise, and also kind of the style, like the bedroom style looks very similar to Tinykin.
I think the jumping sort of between like perspectives. I think the jumping between like the perspectives is going to bring, I think it's going to have way more behind, if it's good, it'll have way more behind than Tinykin did.
Honestly, jumping off of what Blessing said of like, yeah, mechanics like Link Between Worlds, but when you're in that 3D space, it's like the remake of Link's Awakening for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing is they're bringing so much cool visuals to it. And yeah, to the Tinykin thing, right? Like, I love Tinykin so much. And looking, and I'm right there with you on the comparison in terms of how they look. Because, yeah, there's so many parts where they're walking around bedrooms and stuff, right, with a really cool art style. And yeah, that right there speaks to Tinykin. But yeah, my hope would be that this speaks louder than that. Because, you know, a lot of people love Tinykin, but I feel like Tinykin still flew under the radar on the grand scheme of things. Whereas I think this game, right, the Plucky Squire has the chance to speak to the broader audience. The only thing working against it is that, yeah, this might possibly be the best year in video games ever. Like, if this game came out in any other year, and it hits like the way we think it's going to hit, I think we're talking about, you know, best indie of the year or one of the best indies of the year or one of the best games of the year, right? But now I'm like, I hope it at least gets nominated for best indie. Coming off of what we're talking about with Cocoon and other games.
It's Devolver published, right? Or am I making
that up? Yes, you're right.
Okay, right. Yeah. I think that'll sort of help get eyes on it too. I feel like people, maybe it's just my bias of like, I like Devolver games. I feel like people follow that publisher.
Oh, 100%
fairly closely. Mm-hmm. And I think their marketing strategy combined with just maybe the reach that they've worked towards has kind of elevated them as having like their own little sort of sector in gaming.
It's funny you mention people like Devolver as a publisher, as a brand, right? Because we just did the Annapurna showcase where I was like, these are the way people feel about Devolver is often how I feel about Annapurna. And my indie pick is Thirsty Suitors, of course, coming from Outer Loop Games. We now have a release date on it. I forgot. I don't have it in front of me. November 2nd. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Thanks, Barrett. I got to play this at SGF. And again, as I talked about in the reaction stream, if you haven't caught, go watch it on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. For me, it was one that, of course, well, I know Ekka and I've liked his games before, like Falcon Age and stuff like that. But it was that idea from the initial concept and first trailers of it. I was like, that looks awesome. I hope it delivers. I hope it's fun to play. I hope it's not one of those indies that seems like a great idea. You're like, oh, it's middling gameplay. You know, I got to go and play it at SGF, do the demo. And I was like, nope, this is great. This is what I want. You know, you are Jala. You are a woman who's kind of just, you know, in that part of life where you're not 100% sure who you are and what you want to be kind of thing.
I get it.
You come back home, you know what I mean? You're down on your luck. You come back home and you have to deal with your old exes in town. You have to skate in your old skate park, deal with the, you know, disappointing your parents.
I get it.
I'm sure you do, right? Obviously, it's so influenced by the culture in terms of a world I don't know that I'm excited to get to know, similar to Venba, honestly. But you go through and it is, you know, the stuff you're doing is turn-based combat, right? So it's got that Persona vibe to it, but it's got that costume quest edge to it of like active buttons for a little bit extra on your attack, a little bit to block or something when someone comes at you. I dug that. You know, you're inflicting thirst on you. There's other things you do, but in my demo was, you know, you flirt with somebody, your ex-boyfriend, you inflict thirst on him. That makes him screw up your moves because he's, you know, you're flirting with him, turning him on, doing all these different things. Like, I like that. It's got this whole skating thing, but it's not like, let's punish you skating Tony Hawk style. It is like, no, skate and do this fun thing. I got to do the skate park demo. The writing's really funny and clever in it, right? You show up at the skate park, there's these kids, and like, they ask you, are you a cop? And Jala's like, I'm offended that you would think I have a nose piercing and I'm all this. Yeah. And then the kid goes, all adults smell faintly of cops. I was like, yeah, all right.
That's
I like
so
this.
Funny.
I like that a lot. So it seems hilarious. And I think that's what's going to pull me through the turn-based stuff that sometimes usually isn't my jam or whatever. And I think it's really fun and really quaint, and I can't wait to get my hands on November.
Yeah, it seems completely original and unique, and I think that is going to speak loudly when it comes out, right? It's unlike anything else that's coming out around this vicinity, and I would say anything that's coming out this year. And
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it for all the same reasons.
It's kind of Yakuza-like, now that I really think about it. Like, looking at I think, too, like, the trailer that Barrett had pulled up, it's funny, like, hearing you describe it, then looking at the trailer, it felt like for a second, like two different games, and then obviously it converged the more you got into the details and the specifics, because it's such a funky, like bizarre, almost like dreamlike looking game in a lot of it's sort of grounded in reality in terms of the narrative and I think the issues that it addresses, but then it just gets very fever dreamish and over the top and sort of, you know, I think of Yakuza when I think of the specifically like the sort of specials and like how over the top those animations are. It feels like that, but in a more like cartoonified, bombastic way. I also played this demo at SGF and I enjoyed it. I am a little bit nervous about some of the turn-based combat stuff because I think when combined with heavy dialogue, it felt a little bit like wading through mud at times, like in terms of the pacing. So I'm nervous about the pacing, but I did go in, I like left more optimistic than when I entered, where I kind of same thing as you, like it looked cool. Then I played it and I'm like, yeah, I think this could hit. I left with some concerns, but I left with concerns in every game. Like sure. Even Cocoon, I was like, oh, well, I don't know if it'll get like annoying with some of the stuff. But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to as well.
Well, Janet, tell me about your first pick, or your only pick, I guess, for exclusive, for your exclusive, the exclusive you're excited for on PlayStation 5 for the rest of the year.
Sure. So I kind of cheated with this one because it's console exclusive.
No, that counts.
Being on PlayStation. But yeah.
We're just trying to keep it out of Phil Spencer's hands, all right?
Yeah. Well,
otherwise,
point,
there'll
like,
be only
know,
one choice here in the Spider-Man.
I picked Viewfinder. We talk about Viewfinder a lot. We will continue to talk about it because it's awesome. It's got sort of a funky, trippy perspective puzzle game. You know, think Portal, think Superliminal, and think Maquette. It evokes all of those kind of vibes and energies from it. The big mechanic is you're sort of taking photographs, and then as you like, you can place that Polaroid into the world, and then it now exists in the world. And the ways that you've kind of seen that used in, you know, the demo or in the trailers is using it to stack platforms out of like those Polaroid images that come to life, turning it around, you know, in the footage that it showed, like you could spin something and then items fall out of it. It's like it's a lot of getting creative with that mechanic, which is sort of one of my favorite design ethos in games, more so than gaining additional abilities. I really like when the level design and the challenge presented at you can help you recontextualize existing mechanics. And I think Viewfinder is very much a game about recontextualization, which makes sense because it's a game about perspective inherently. And I haven't played the demo because I'm trying to save it, but I have seen some snippets of, you know, friends playing it and things, and it looks like it gets really funky with its taken art style as well, and sort of using that Polaroid mechanic to introduce different visual styles into what is essentially a pretty minimalistic environment, as it's a first-person game, kind of just on floating little platforms. But yeah, Viewfinder. And also, boom, it's a dope smaller title that's coming to PlayStation, which we are kind of always looking for here. Like, PlayStation kind of having that tastemaker moment and sort of being like, hey, here's an awesome game that you can only play on PlayStation and PC. But, you know, we're talking about consoles here, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where we've had conversations before about PlayStation's indie output, right? And we talk about, you know, there's reasons why you'd want to come to PC. There's reasons why you'd want to go to Xbox or Game Pass. There's reasons why you'd want to be on Switch for that audience and the retention rate, right? But, like, you know, it's nice to see something like Viewfinder come to PlayStation because, yeah, this game looks dope as hell. And to all the comparisons you'd made, Janet, to, like, Portal and Superliminal and other games like that, right? Like, I also think of Manifold Garden, which is a game that I love dearly, and then also nice. Anti-Chamber that I played back in the day that I also love dearly. Like, I love these kinds of games, and Viewfinder, for all the ones I played, right, I don't get surprised anymore. You know, like, Manifold Garden had such cool concepts from the infinitely repeating worlds that they did, but I saw that and I thought it was really well executed and really cool, but didn't like that stuff doesn't surprise me anymore, right? Maquette didn't surprise me, even though I think the gimmicks are really cool. Everything I've seen from Viewfinder so far has surprised me in how well it works, and that has me excited because it makes me feel the first time I played Portal, right, where you play with the portal gun and you're like, there's no way this works the way it presents itself to work, and then you use it and you're like, oh, this is really cool. Viewfinder is giving me those feels, and yeah, I cannot wait to play it.
What else can you not wait to play for your indie pick, Blessing Adeoye Jr.?
My exclusive pick?
Yes.
My exclusive pick. It's a game.
I look at my notes. I'm like,
yeah, I know.
It was a great transition. Up until it. It was a great transition.
It's a game that is slated for 2023. That at this point, I'm be honest.
You're not believing?
I don't think this game is coming out.
Either.
I don't think this game is coming out in 2023. It is Stellar Blade. It's a game that was revealed as a PlayStation exclusive, I believe, at the previous at the State of Play last year, right, where they revealed the name last fall. It was revealed before that, right, as a Project Eve. And it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. The thing that I always compare this game to is Nier, but it's also like so much more than that in terms of what it's bringing to the table, art style, and in the action game department. When you look at the action gameplay, it looks almost like a mix of a character action game, but then also you can, I feel like there's a bit of Souls like in there. You know, it's like, it's fast like a character action game, but in the ways that like the this boss fight right now that Barrett's showing, there's this level of like precision and enemy animation that feels very deliberate, that reminds me of playing something from Software or Souls like. But yeah, I love how stylish it is. I love that, you know, this is giving me the you know, feels of the kind of action games that I love, right? The Devil May Cry's, the Platinum action games of the world, the Metal Gear Solid Rising Revengeances of the world. But it looks like it's doing its own thing. And then, you know, when you watch the story trailer, audio-wise, it reminds me of Nier, just in how the soundtrack sounds. Mm-hmm. The story-wise, there's a lot of stuff with androids and world-building there that reminds me of Nier as well. And then, like, even in Nier, there's a character named Adam and Eve, and this character, the main character, I believe, in this game is named Eve as well. Like, there's a lot of analogs to that that I appreciate, but also doesn't feel like they just went, hey, let's make that. Let's make Nier. Sure. It doesn't feel like they just did that. It feels like they're being inspired by a bunch of different things, and it looks really good. Like, visually, it looks incredible, very colorful, very bright. I just want to know where it is. Right before this episode, I tweeted out, where is Stellar Blade? Because I am shocked that it wasn't at the last PlayStation showcase for a game slated in 2023, mm-hmm. which tells me that it's not coming out this year. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope it
until they
us.
Tell you something, right? Until they say it's not 2023, you're allowed to believe.
Yeah. And so my thing is I'm hoping maybe we get a PlayStation showcase this fall and they announce maybe it's coming out in the first half of next year. You know, that's where my hope is at right now. But I just want to play it. I want to try it out. It looks really cool. It's coming from, I believe the devs called Shift Up, who previously worked on very popular mobile stuff. And we're seeing that happen more and more. And, like, I'm hoping a lot of these games come out good, because it's a question mark in terms of, like, these games that PlayStation's partnering with and a lot of bigger companies are partnering with to see greenlit and coming out worldwide. It's like a lot of stuff coming out of China, a lot of stuff coming out of Korea, right? I want to see this stuff come out and do good, because these games look really cool. So that's my exclusive pick.
My exclusive pick should shock no one in the world, right? It's Spider-Man 2. We said we wouldn't double up on stuff.
I was I'm not saying first in this selection.
I know. I was like, I know somebody else would have put it in. I think maybe I shouldn't, but it's like, I put it in there.
It's true.
You got to be true to yourself, and I can't fucking wait for Spider-Man 2. Of course, Barrett's showing the SGF demo again, and it's just like, to get in there, have the black suit, to go back to Peter, to go back to Miles, to go back to the Marvel game Spider-Man universe. I'm so stoked for. I'm so excited to see what they have up their sleeve. And, you know, just like a good Spider-Man comic or a good Spider-Man movie, right? I'm so excited for the story. Like, I'm excited. If you were asking me to, like, list in terms of bullet points what I'm stoked about when I think of Spider-Man 2, I think about the story first, then I think about what the suit powers will be for rocking the symbiote, and then I think about, like, platinuming the game, going through and getting every nerdy little collectible, exploring that city, finding all the Easter eggs again, you know, for what Spider-Man was and what Spider-Man Miles Morales was. It was, but I really, what Spider-Man was when we got it, right? It was Insomniac not only crushing it and making the definitive Spider-Man game, it really was them flexing their Spider-Man nerd muscles, right? In terms of like the amount of things they hid, the amount of references they put in there, the love that went into Harry's audio diaries, or the things that were in the back or the foreground of a scene with Norman Osborn, or, you know, even just finding backpacks and having little notes and stuff in there that really fleshed out who Peter was and who MJ was to him and all those different things. I'm excited to see what that looks like in this world. I'm excited for the twists and turns of the story. And then, of course, I'm excited for this gameplay as we see Miles flying, which you kind of forget.
The wingsuit is really cool.
Yeah, the wingsuit is going to be dope. But yeah, I assume you're all on the same page about that. We've talked a lot about Spider-Man.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
My thing, though, my thing is, as we've been getting more and more dope games this year, I've been thinking more and more about our game of the year. And at the top of the year, I felt like it was a given that Spider-Man 2 is going to be in our top three by the time we get to the end of the year. Now I've been thinking about, like, is it going to hit our top five even when we get to our kind of funny countdown? Because I think about Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, how well that hit. I think about Final Fantasy 16 and how much kind of funny The Office is loving it. I think about Starfield coming up. I think about Star Wars Jedi Survivor. And then there's Alan Wake 2. There's Diablo. This might be the greatest.
There's a lot of good games.
A lot of good games. Might be the best year of gaming, but that I'm sure will be a 900 people podcast you'll hear thousands of times come December and January. It's interesting, right? Because I think you're spot on with the first two. I think Zelda, Final Fantasy, I see being in front of Spider-Man in terms of the kind of funny office overall. But that's where then it gets questionable.
Interesting.
Where I think I could see Spider-Man. The top three is questionable because of how many great games there are this year. Top five, I think, is guaranteed. It's like, unless the way Spider-Man fails is that it is just more Spider-Man, which always sucks to say.
But isn't that what it's going to be?
Like, yeah, but, and that's where I'm at too.
Like, I don't want to, you know, I think a lot of times we talk about, whenever we get into that, like, more of the same territory, it gets intense for some people listening, where they're like, what's wrong with it? It's just still good. I'm like, yeah, but I'm full. Like, you can only eat, like, okay, so I made a pound of macaroni and cheese on, was it Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday. That's just how much I cook when I cook it, whatever. I knew there'd be leftovers. I didn't anticipate how many leftovers it'd be. We had, like, six metal containers of six servings left over of macaroni and cheese. And I mean macaroni and cheese all the time. And I love macaroni and cheese, but after a certain point, I kind of want DiGiorno even if it's not as good as the mac and cheese I made. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, tell me you can't tell me you can't relate to that. Like, come on now. Anyway.
But you got to pace out the mac and cheese. It's been a few years since we've
had
that.
That is the thing. And what I'm saying of more Spider-Man. What I'm saying,
you want me to compliment the way I did when you first made it, and like, it don't bang like that anymore. Like, or maybe it will. I don't know.
I'm saying, but so stick with me. I just mean, and I know this is, now we're getting into even,
I love the mac and cheese comparison.
An even bigger argument.
Because,
right?
When you have grandma's mac and cheese for the third Thanksgiving in a row, it's like, it's great mac and cheese.
No, man, you haven't had that mac and cheese of the year. You're
That's what he's
excited.
Saying. That's what he's saying, isn't it? I think that I'm saying it just has to be that if the Spider-Man doesn't deliver the thrills, high highs in gameplay and high highs in story, I have every belief it will. But if it was that you came in and you're like, oh, it just plays the same as Spider-Man. Oh, it just does the same thing. Personally, and I know this, you and I don't agree on this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Miles Morales is better than Spider-Man. I always want to say remastered.
2018.
Spider-Man, right? Yeah. Because of, I thought they learned a lot in terms of cinematography and pacing of the story. The way they had character, the NPCs they gave. Like,
You like the pacing of the story in Miles Morales more than 2018.
Now, you are correct. The villain sucks and whatever. Or the main villain who was Tobey Maguire.
Troy Baker.
Yeah, but Troy Baker, but he was playing the guy from that 70s show. Topher Grace. Guy looks exactly like Topher Grace, but it's played by Troy Baker.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. I can't unsee it. You can get me an image of the dude.
That's really funny.
You know what I mean?
He's no idea. Just
Spider-Man
Morales.
Miles Morales, villain. Main villain.
Not the Tinker.
Troy Baker. Spider-Man Miles Morales, Troy Baker.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Okay, wait.
I like the Tinkerer. I like the angle of the Tinkerer, of the battle between her and Miles and stuff like that. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I love Spider-Man Miles Morales in a way I know you didn't. And you know, not divisive really, but it's like,
even it's divisive of like 4 versus 5, right? On the kind of funny scale. A 4 out of 5 versus a 5.
Sure.
Out of 5.
Yeah, that's a great point or whatever, right? And so I think, yeah, getting into a large. I see, yeah.
You think he looks like Topher Grace in that 70s
who
show?
Is it? Fuck, god damn it. Now I'm in my own head. Do I think it's Topher Grace or somebody else?
I don't know.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I love
actually.
Greg
Hold
asking,
on.
Do I think Hold this on. Person? How would we possibly be able to
It's been so
question.
Long since I saw this fucking guy. And the, no, it does. This is.
Pull up the
no,
other
I'm
guy.
I was going to say,
the
get me an in motion thing, Barrett. But I think him on this white background isn't doing me any favors. But that definitely the one trailer where he's like leaning in and talking to you or whatever, I thought he looked like Topher Grace. Doesn't matter. Know. He looks like generic ass white guy. And he just shows up to be the generic ass villain. You know what I mean? So bam, done. Anyways,
sorry, there's so much going on in the chat.
I like you to laugh at the show and interact with the chat. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, it's Keegan's chat saying kind of looks like Jeff Keighley, which is a little bit true. Like,
no, bring it back up.
Bit.
No, we're not going to.
Yeah, but I mean,
we're not going to do this to Jeff Keighley.
With all due respect to Jeff Keighley and talking as a generic white guy.
That's an image from him from last week.
Generic ass white
you
guy.
You told me
yeah.
if we do that face fade, it's not going to be kind of. Here's the thing.
It's
I'm
because that's
it's
a Game Awards hosting fit.
And people always, you know, whenever you say like, oh, this looks like this person or this looks like you, people will always be like, don't look at any of me. I didn't say it was you. I said it's you know, it's similar. It's similar. I just remember Keegan wrote, all right? Like, he kind of nailed it. I feel like this could be, you could put this into Death Stranding and I wouldn't notice.
We'll wait.
Anyway, I'm excited for the next Spider-Man game. And to your guys' point of the which one's kind of better or whatever, I think Miles is more even, but I think Spider-Man, the first one, is more flavorful. Like, it has lower lows, but I think the highs are higher. I felt more emotion watching and playing Spider-Man 2018 than I did during Miles' story. And what I'm hoping for this one, you know, mac and cheese metaphor aside, is that this feels like the convergence of those two different kinds of highs, you know, where there's like the mechanical, and I think like we're talking about the NPCs and things like that that we get with Miles, but I want like the emotional impact and frankly the amount of suits as we got in 2018, which I know the suit thing, it's like, oh, well, you can only pick whatever. Okay, I don't care whatever comic book reason you have. I like putting on the different suits, okay? I don't know. But yeah.
Can I tell you, in my notifications on Twitter, something ominous is happening. Because like,
Blade isn't coming out.
I get a notification. You know, speaking of Thirsty Suitors, from Eka.
Oh, God.
Who just retweeted the tweet from weeks ago that of me on the show talking about the fantasy critic of, like, what I... Because I was making the argument of, like, I don't know how high Thirsty Suitors is going to do on Open Critic or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, you called Eka on the show and we had a fun bit about it. And so Eka, like, tweeted out the videos, like, love you, at Blessing Junior. He just retweeted that video again, which makes me think that, like, he either watched our
reaction... Is he watching right now?
Or he's watching live. I can't tell.
Nobody called him?
Well, what does it mean? What do you mean?
Maybe he just had consultants come back and they predicted like
watching
a really
the reactions
score.
Now, maybe? You know?
What do you mean? What do you mean, Eka?
Maybe he just didn't have organic content today and was like, let's just go back into the retweet bag, you know?
I need to know the meaning of this retweet.
That is ominous though. I understand.
What's up?
Eka, it's Greg Miller. You're live on PS I Love You XOXO. How are you?
Good.
He already knows what we're calling about, too.
Blessing, yeah. In the middle of this show, Blessing was like, wait a second, why is Eka retweeting the dunk I made on him or whatever? Now, did you watch the reactions where he was positive, or are you watching the live recording of PS I Love You where he's positive about your game?
Oh, no, I watched the reaction. Was it? Well, it was. You guys were watching the stream.
So yeah. That. Yeah, okay. And so then you said it. You saw it. You saw him be excited about your game, and you still decided to go throw in his face, this hater.
No, I said we got him. I love it. As soon as he saw some ass on screen, I think he's like,
wow.
Accurate.
What a read.
That's exactly how it happened, though. And so, yeah.
Great showing today, Eka. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
All right, talk to you later. Bye.
All right, bye.
As soon as he saw some ass on the screen, good Lord, what do we do here?
Oh, fucking got your number, Blessing.
Got him.
It was good ass.
Blessing?
Yep.
I want you to start the third-party section of our show. I want you to tell me what third-party you are excited for coming to PlayStation 5 in 2023.
This is
right after I tell everybody about patreon.com/kindoffunny. If you love this show, love us, and like us staying independent, hey, why not head over to patreon.com/kindoffunny? You could kick us some bucks to say, hey, great job. Then you could watch the show live as we record them a day before anybody else, just like Omega Buster, Keegan Hill, and Greg Spencer are. Of course, you could get dozens and dozens, actually hundreds and hundreds, no joke, of exclusive content only available on patreon.com/kindoffunny. And of course, you can get cool new merch all the time. However, since you're not on patreon.com/kindoffunny, here's a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. It's so easy to get caught up in what everyone else needs from you and never take a moment to think about what you need from yourself. I know this from experience, how often it just seems easier to care about others and to keep it moving. But when we spend all of our time giving, it can leave us feeling stretched thin and burnt out. Therapy can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. Some of my very best friends use BetterHelp and love how helpful it can be for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/kindoffunny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/kindoffunny.
All right, bless.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
So we're looking for your third-party pick to round out our 15 games here.
It was tough to decide. I came down to two games. It was between Armored Core and then my actual pick. Liza P.
Good job, Demo.
Good job, Demo. Yeah, this is coming off of me going back and completing that demo and really loving that demo. Again, you guys have heard about Liza P a million times, right? It's the new Souls-like game that is taking a lot of inspiration from Bloodborne as well as other From Software titles. It stars a puppet that could be Pinocchio. I don't think we got confirmation about
it. It's Pinocchio.
But we don't know that. Maybe you're finding Pinocchio. It's just the main character looks like Timothy Chalamet. And so I just call him.
He looks just like Timothy. This one is a one-to-one.
Yeah, so I just call him Timothy Chalamet. But you're playing as Timothy, and you know you're going through this world that is very dark, very grim, has like a lot of Bloodborne feels, but also I think does have a lot of unique energy because a lot of the enemies that you're fighting against are these mechanical creatures that are Geppetto's creations, and I think that is a lovely idea for a game. That's what I love to see when you're going back and you're taking an IP that I forget what they call it when like the license can be used by anybody.
Public domain.
Yes, when you're reaching into something that just became public domain to do whatever you want with it, this is what I want to see you do. This looks creative. It's really fun to play. I think they're learning all the right things from Bloodborne, and yeah, I'm so excited about it.
Janet in the PS I Love You Slack channel, I was doing something else real quick. It says pre-order bonus LMAO, and then throws up this is clear. This cat, it's Pinocchio. It's Pinocchio. Look at this pre-order bonus outfit.
You don't know it for sure.
The image is really tiny, but it's like what has to be the best cosmetic pre-order bonus I've ever seen.
An audio listener, it's
in my life.
A little clown hat, the yellow thing, and then a big old fluffy neck thing.
Maybe you steal that off of the real Pinocchio.
It looks like a puppet.
It's called Mischievous Puppets Clothes Parade Hat.
Great.
Which
hat,
that's like the first boss, right? Like the parade like leader or whatever, or like one of the early bosses.
I say you can steal that outfit off of Pinocchio.
That's what he did. That's what he did right there. Okay, great.
Also, you're right. It doesn't say Pinocchio, but it says you are a puppet created by Geppetto.
Exactly.
Like, that has to be Pinocchio.
But in this world,
he wasn't
everything's
a puppet guy, though. You're right.
But here's
everything's created by him.
Her nose didn't get bigger.
Yeah. I think the final boss is the real Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Blast.
And like when you fight him,
his sword is his nose.
Yeah. And he's just waving his face around like this.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be great.
Hard to believe you haven't been scooped up for a game dev role yet, no? You know? You're the beating pitching to Shuhei. Like, I swipe your face around like...
No, Shuhei, you don't understand. It's Pinocchio.
Where are you going? Come back!
He lies, so his nose gets bigger. So you have to fight him like this. Oh, shit. Oh, I just hit the microphone.
For my third-party game, I'm picking Alan Wake 2. This was my game of SGF. It is my most anticipated game of 2023. Again, we can talk about it for a million different reasons, and I know I've talked its ear off before, but just a combination of a whole bunch of different stuff I really, really like of, you know, the outsider mystery. Then we're tossing in a whole bunch of, you know, the detective stuff that I've wanted and gotten out of True Detective but struggled to get out of a game. It looks great. I love the mystery of having the two different playable characters, right? Going through his saga, going through his Alan, seeing how their stories intertwine and sect. And it was just such a great demo of having such little HUD on screen, being so cinematic, being spooky, being scary, and then going to the Mind Palace and, you know, connecting clues one by one with the string theory on the board and having to, like, you know, profile people. And I was like, oh, man, like, this sounds awesome. I love Remedy, especially since Control, right? Like, Control was such a breakout, like, oh, this is what modern Remedy is. And to see them bring that over here gets me so excited. I can't wait for Alan Wake 2. Again, I still have never made it through Alan Wake 1 because it just wasn't my kind of game, but this is survival horror, which is a Greg genre, so I'm pretty stoked for it.
Yeah, I was jealous you picked this one because this would have been my pick. I think I might be there with you for most anticipated for the rest of the year because I don't think like anything else tops it for me. Yeah, same deal as you. I started playing Alan Wake 1 and I was like, nah, I'm all right. I mean, I still kind of want to go back. I was like, I'm kind of feeling the narrative, but I wasn't feeling the gameplay like at all, even on the remaster. This was so stunning and like a wonderful mashup of things. And I think if you liked Control, this seeing like, you know, the bigger slice of this at SGF and like getting to like do the hands off, but someone else was directly hands on. Is there a name for that when you have like a live demoist? I don't know if there's like a shorter name for that, but watching that happen in
hands
real time.
Hands off demo, yeah. But I guess then.
Right? Yeah, but it's like, I'm hands off, but they're hands on. Like, I don't know. There's something there. Like, someone let me know what this could be called. Because there's like hands off where it's just you're showing me footage already. But this had the immediacy of live theater, you know? So, like, it hit different. Yeah, it was just so atmospheric and spooky and twisted. And I think for, you know, anyone who's completed Control knows that that game's a little bit scarier than anyone really anticipated. And I feel like this pulls on a lot of that trippy nature.
X-Files vibe.
They got the good fonts too. Oh, like, yeah, I don't know, drop the font, Remedy, because like, what are I gonna pay?
Andy
to
should,
use that
if Andy was listening, he'd run in here and tell you, he knows for sure.
Impact.
Yeah, but it's very stylish.
Impactful.
Yeah,
impactful. Janet, what third party game are you excited for?
I'm going with Oxenfree 2. I'm going heavy indie in a lot of these. This is Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals, made by Night School. This is a follow-up to their other game, like two games ago or whatever, Oxenfree, which I adored. This is similar vibe and still an island, but different characters, different islands. So it's more pulling on the idea of the supernatural and using like a radio and radio frequencies as the way that you kind of interact with like what is essentially potentially like another dimension. You know, this is kind of, God, I forgot what year Oxenfree 1 came at and if it was before or after Stranger Things, but it has that Stranger Things energy to it. Like the
I think it was
world.
Right around the same time. Hold on.
Yeah, because it kind of has some of that upside down energy, like not like one-to-one because there's not like
January, you know, 15th, 2016.
Yeah, so that's like in that kind of season. But one thing that was really exciting to me about this is just I love the narrative of Oxenfree 1. I thought it was a really emotional story, and it's one of the few games that I like really got all the juice out of because I like replayed it and got like the true ending.
I was
and
gonna
all that.
Say, did you do the whole new game plus thing?
Oh, yeah. Normally I just like look up the ending, but like once I think I did have to look up stuff though. I didn't just wander into the true ending, but I kind of was like, is that really how it ends? And then people were like, oh, if you go and like do the new game plus stuff, you get like additional things. And it, I think, did a lot. It just had like a big emotional impact because a lot of Oxenfree 1, without spoiling it, is sort of dealing with not just ghosts, but like your past in some ways, the idea of maybe going back to change your past, the idea of kind of what are you perceiving and what is true? Like it has a lot of like, what is reality sort of moments and, you know, where are you and how do you get out and how do you break the loop? It's kind of a little bit of a loop game before loop games really had their year in the spotlight. So Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals.
We did a kind of feudy the other day that had time loops in it. And it was on hopper. And I was like, no one's saying Oxenfree. No one thought about Oxenfree as a loop game.
No, because it's not as in your face mechanic. It's not quite used. It is used as a mechanic, but not in the same way that I think we got used to with certain loop games.
Sure.
So I'm excited for this. It's not often that, you know, a smaller studio, even though it's funny to think of Night School as small when they just got acquired by Netflix. But, you know, it's like a weird mashup of like what is indie, right? But it's rare to get like direct sequels to indie games for a lot of reasons, you know, like marketing issues and then like does anyone care enough and all that. So I'm definitely a little bit nervous that it won't hit those highs, but I'm always down for whatever Night School has cooking up, and this is no different.
Three things, like the Dudley Boys would say. Nina in the live chat says, is Oxenfree 2 coming to Netflix at launch or just consoles and Steam?
Netflix.
It's everything. Yeah, it's coming everywhere at launch. It's not windowed anywhere, so you don't have to worry about that. Then for you, Janet, Stranger Things debuted July 15th, 2016. So Oxenfree did beat Stranger Things to market. And then this is another one that I played at SGF, and I was actually not pleasantly surprised by. That wouldn't be the right idea. I know the talent of Night School, but for me, for some reason, Oxenfree didn't work Like, it did not click. Right. I did not fall in love with it like I thought I would, and so many people thought I would as a story gamer. What I like about Oxenfree 2 from the demo I played at SGF, right, is it seems we get to the supernatural quicker. I think that might be what threw me off about Oxenfree in retrospect. It was the, all right, cool, it's about these characters you're meeting and the relationships and the choices you're making in dialogue, and then this thing starts to happen, but then we're still worrying about that. But then, and then I was like, can we get to what is going on faster so I know? And like, for it to start and it'd be like, yo, this is what's going on, there's crazy shit happening, I'm like, okay, I think that might work for me better, but we'll see.
I think too, just real quick, I want to comment on Night School. I was gonna say After Party, that was their second game, or their last game. The thing that really stands out for this studio to me is their, besides like their stylized UI for dialogue boxes, is their ability to create really natural conversation. I think a lot of people that are sort of on the fence as like narrative game people are like, the dialogue just doesn't feel natural, or I don't like the pacing. Like, I think they do a great job with pacing because it kind of just goes and you could do anything. You could respond. You can not talk for like minutes at a time, a bunch of different dialogue going on. And they'll comment on the fact that you're not talking or that you're walking away or whatever, but it feels like you have a lot of freedom to really play it your way. And while there is like a choice-based element, it's very like woven within the dialogue and the conversations. There's not really that big, no offense to like Life is Strange, because I love Life is Strange, but there's not like a, and that's gonna matter, and here's how it matters. Like, it's much more subtle and natural and like a storybook that you don't realize that you're even writing, or that you're a co-author of. So I think they handle co-authorship in a way that feels more organic than maybe any studio is putting out in the narrative space, in my opinion. So if that's been a point of pause for you, I do think this could be worth checking out if you kind of are like an on-the-cusp narrative person.
Blessing.
Greg.
Tell me about the game you're hopeful for. One game to pick for PlayStation 5's rest of 2023 that you hope pans out.
So there's a game that was announced today, as of the day we're recording, right? It was announced this morning, that takes me back to the conversations we had about Hot Wheels Unleashed a couple years ago when that came out, where we would see trailers for it and go, oh, this looks kind of neat, but it's a Hot Wheels game, like, it's licensed. There's no way that this comes out and it's good. And then we got our hands on Hot Wheels Unleashed and we're pleasantly surprised by it. I get some of the same vibes from this, just from this debut trailer. It is Wild Card Football. This is a game that, again, was announced today. It stars Colin Kaepernick, and it's coming from Saber Interactive. I assume it's the same team that brought us NBA Playgrounds. I've been trying to do research on that, but I can't find anything concrete. But it has some of that NBA Playgrounds style and energy to it. But even more so, it reminds me of playing NFL Blitz back in the day, or playing NFL Street back in the day. It looks like it wants to be a arcadey football game that is fun to play, that, you know, throws out all the sim elements and goes all in on things like power-ups that I really appreciate. I have a Polygon article pulled up that was written by Owen S. Good, and there's two paragraphs that I want to highlight here, right? So they started off by talking about wild card football. It's a 7-on-7 throwdown jacked with zany power-ups, such as Kaepernick growing super size and stomping the hell out of the defense. A news release on Thursday said Kaepernick will be joined by hundreds of genuine pro players, meaning Saber got an NFL Players Association group license, but it doesn't have the National Football League license. I then jump forward in the article where I believe, is this Kaepernick? Let's see. Yeah, I believe this is Kaepernick talking about the game, where he says, quote, "It feels, I think, in relation to what Fortnite is in that realm, or Mario Kart within racing, this very much feels that way to me," Kaepernick added. "Those were the games I enjoyed the most, games like that growing up." He said his youth involved a steady diet of NBA Jam, NFL Blitz, and NFL Street, as well as Zelda, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, and the Final Fantasy series. And earlier in the article, they talked about, like, Colin Kaepernick is involved in the development of the game, which I think is really fun and interesting. But yeah, this is one of those ones that reminds me of a lot of the arcadey football games I played growing up, and that immediately is going to get me in. But also, you know, I played NBA Playgrounds when that came out, and I thought that game was fun, right? Like, wasn't necessarily my favorite arcade basketball game, but I think it got the job done. I'm hoping with Wild Card Football, they're able to pull that off on the NFL side of things and hopefully, you know, recreate some of that magic that a lot of people love out of NFL Street or NBA or NFL Blitz.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I hope that pans out. That's something, you know, Mike's always talking about, wanting those kind of street games again, the EA big titles.
Yeah.
I hope it works out. I hope it's good. For me, what I put here was Ghostbusters Rise of the Ghost Lord, of course, coming to PlayStation VR 2. This is the Ghostbusters VR game. We were lucky enough at Halloween time to have the first hands-on and do some interview stuff here and hang out with them. playing it, obviously it was, you know, October of last year. There's still no date on it. They're still saying this year. Playing it then, I was like, you know what? This is fun. You know, I had a bunch of concerns as a big Ghostbuster fan, right? Of like, we've talked about this before, you know, like I miss with PlayStation VR 2 not having the gun attachment to put everything in with the move wands. So for a Ghostbusters game, I was originally thinking of, you know, having a Neutrona wand in your hand, but it would be the same thing of a split hand. I don't like that. They get around it by kind of giving you a Gatling gun feel with this one. So one hand at the back of the Neutrona wand and one hand on the side of it to spin around and do stuff. And it was fun to bust these ghosts. You know, the multiplayer worked. You're customizing your Ghostbuster. You're running through and doing these things. It's in San Francisco. It's its own universe. It's kind of got this extreme Ghostbuster style to it that I really dug and appreciated. And so gameplay was far from finished, right? You're playing something very early, but the core mechanic of it, I enjoyed. Walking around with my PKE meter out, trying to seek out the ghosts, I enjoyed. Trapping the ghosts, I enjoyed. I hope it looks as good as it looks in the trailer. You know, again, it's got that stylized thing. That would be my concern, is what the visual fidelity of it would be. And then also, how deep is it? What is going on with it? Is it actually fun over the course to play, or is it doing the same thing over and over again and having, as I always talk about with my PlayStation VR 2 complaints, the Dave and Buster's feel? This is an arcade game that I'm not drawn to see the finish of. Am I actually going to want to go through and fight the Ghost Lord and figure this whole story out? Or is it going to be something we stream and have a great time with and I put down and never come back to? That's why I'm hopeful that the promise I saw last year in October pans out this year, but we'll have to wait and see. Janet, what do you got?
I swapped mine out last minute because I really want to encompass this, the nature of this category, which is hopeful. So I want there to be a lot of doubt in here. So I'm going with Goodbye Volcano High. This is a game that I'm so afraid is not going to be good that I saw it on the PAX East floor and I kept walking. I was like, I don't even want to touch this. Even though, and for the record, I feel like I did hear like from a few people like, oh yeah, it was cool. Like the demo was cool. You know, I don't know. I'm scared. The premise, this is a cinematic narrative game, kind of about like the end of an era. It's got like that band thing. Here's the thing. Where have I been burned before? You already know. We are OFK.
We are OFK, right? That's the exact same thing. And the whole band thing, like, but is it?
It's giving We Are OFK meets, like, one time I saw on Twitter when this game was announced that this game feels very DeviantArt.
Yes.
So, like, the DeviantArt We Are OFK combo, I can't do it. But I'm a believer because I love, you know, a cinematic narrative game. This has, like, some rhythm elements. It could be, this is, like, the classic Janet Gregg game that's either going to be pretty cool or is not even going to suck, because a lot of times the games that we play that don't pan out don't even suck. It's just like they're like really mid.
They break our heart. They're so mid,
like,
they break our heart.
If it sucked, I could leave episode one, but it's like it's just enough there that I'm like, does anyone else care about what happens at the end of this not good game? And it's like just me and Greg, right? This just gives me that vibe. I think also we haven't heard a lot about it. Like, obviously it had...
Well, it's been gestating for so long, right? This was originally supposed to be a launch game for PlayStation 5, and we hadn't heard anything for so long.
Wait, isn't that date passed? It said June 15th, 2023.
Yeah, they delayed it again. Don't worry, man.
I do think, while I was Googling, I saw rumblings of August come up. I don't know if that's confirmed. If it is, I have it. Why am I not hearing about it? You know?
Kind of funny.com/calendar. I'm sure it's there.
Exactly. Like, it's not that, you know, when that stuff happens, when I make those comments, it's not that people aren't working on getting that marketing
according
out there,
to but, Wikipedia, yes. Goodbye Hall of blah, blah, blah. The game is scheduled for release August 29th.
Yeah.
And I hate to, like, and again, this is not to disparage the people that are obviously working on marketing this product. I'm sure there are people doing it. But the fact that I am into this genre, work in this field, and haven't really heard it, like, you know, it reminds me of like when they unceremoniously dropped like that Road 96 sequel, and I was like, when did this come? Oh, it's here now, and no one liked it. Like, what happened? Like, it just kind of, you know, came by. So this is the one I'm hopeful for. I'm going down with the ship. Get ready to hear me and Greg Swarthercast.
Oh yeah, if we love or hate Goodbye Volcano High, Jan and I are going to have a lot to say about it for sure. Because you know, this narrative game, these dinosaurs at the end of the world, they're dating and like, oh, fuck yeah, let's go.
Senior year of high school, like, this could be like real
the vibes.
Cheesy.
These vibes real bless. Cringe. Bless.
Yes.
When it comes to your final pick for our 15 PS I Love You XOXO PlayStation 5 games we're still anticipating in 2023, which are you going to put in the multiplayer category?
Exo Primal.
Oh!
Yeah. I got to preview this game at Capcom a month ago. This game is a really fun game.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know much about it. I thought this would have been like a hopeful.
No. This game is legitimately fun. Yeah.
I want it for the memes. I didn't know it actually be good.
It's really fun video. The only thing I think that has going against it is the price point, because I believe it's full price. So I go on Steam. $60. It's $60 on Steam. I don't know how much it is on consoles, but I assume that it's going to be equal on consoles. But it's a really fun multiplayer game that is taking, you know, some the
$60.
$60. All right, cool. It's taking like kind of the game modes that you see out of a game like Overwatch in terms of moving the payload and all this stuff, plus the horde mode type combat that you get in plenty of those games, right? And melding them together in a really fun way. And so the way I'll place it, right, is about a month and a half ago, I went to Capcom for a preview event. That preview event was for both Street Fighter and Exo Primal. And they did it in, they cut the day in halves, right? Where I was there for the full day. The first half was Street Fighter, and then the second half was Exo Primal. I went there excited to check out Street Fighter because it was us playing more World Tour for the first time. And, you know, spent the first half of the day playing Street Fighter, was enjoying it, you know, got done with it and went, oh, man, I got to play Exo Primal for the rest of the day for like a 3.5 hour session.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, oh, man, like, all right, I guess, let's do this. We're going to play some Exo Primal. All right. We start playing Exo Primal, and they divided the rooms up into teams. And so, you know, my team was all secluded in one room, and we're facing another room full of press people that were playing on their own separate team. And by the time we started our first match, there was already this rivalry going on, where the match starts, and it's the mode starts off as we are doing this horde, fighting hordes of dinosaurs that are appearing one by one and making our way through the different groups of hordes. And it is a race where you finish the first horde, and every horde takes you maybe like 20 to 30 seconds to beat. You finish the first horde, and then an announcer says, you are ahead of the other team, or you are 5 seconds behind the other team, right? They're telling you whether you're ahead or behind. And then as you're making your way up, through to the next horde, you can see the ghosts of the other team and like how far ahead they are of you or how far behind they are.
Very cool.
And so it is this battle of, oh, we got to beat these dinosaurs faster than the other team is beating their dinosaurs. You get through that phase. And then once that's done, it then starts phase two of, now let's push these payloads to the end of the map.
Okay.
That is where like the actual PvP element starts up, because then you are now meeting halfway through that with the other team, and now you are literally fighting each other to see who can get their payload to the front before the other team does, and you are interfering with each other. There's a power up you can get to where you turn into a giant dinosaur and then start fucking up the other team, and so now you have to shift all focus on you. There are different abilities for the different exosuits that you have in the game, and so there's, you know, a heavy exosuit that has on like a grenade launcher and stuff, or you have like another exosuit that is melee focused with a sword, and you have all these different cool abilities to them, and it is ridiculous, over the top, and a surprising amount of fun. I left that preview being like, wow, I think I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Street Fighter at this preview. Part of that was because they made me play a lot of World Tour, and World Tour just didn't click with me. But another part of that is I think Exo Primal has the stuff. I think that game is actually pretty dope. And that's not even to mention the narrative stuff, which, you know, that's not going to be the main event of Exo Primal, but from what I did see, the visuals and character models and designs remind me a lot of Metal Gear. Just like there's a character that kind of reminds me of an I want to call him Octagon. Bear, what's his actual
Ocelot?
Name?
Otacon.
Oh. Thank you.
Mike always called him Octagon.
I know. Mike fucked up my brain because now I can't call him Octagon. But reminded me of Otacon a little bit. Like, it has that sort of presentation in the narrative.
He's
but
like then, really weirdly into his sister.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a whole there's a story to back that up, you know?
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do when you're Octagon?
Was there a story?
What are you going to do when you're Octagon?
It was AI. The AIs did it, all right, Barrett? You can't blame
nanomachines.
The nano machines, but yeah, like, and it, the story also seems somewhat self-aware in a very fun, fun way. And so, yeah, Exo Primal, legitimately, out of the multiplayer games that are coming out for the rest of the year, is high up there for my anticipated.
Yeah. All right.
I forgot offhand, but can you do the or maybe I probably never knew, because all I knew about this was like you're shooting dinosaurs, and I was like, sign me up, like, you know. But to hear that it genuinely is good is really exciting to hear. But for the campaign, like the story stuff, can you run that co-op also, or like no?
I'm not entirely sure the exact setup of it, but the way I understand it to be is that you are progressing the campaign by doing these multiplayer missions, like these multiplayer matches.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's not really a single player campaign.
It was like Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed kind of thing, where you go do the, and I'm not making a joke, you get the cutscene or story or whatever, you go play a bit, you come back.
Like, yes.
Okay, okay. Cool. Mine shocks no one, I'm sure. Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
Come on. Mm. I've been waiting forever for another Helldivers. I would put Helldivers, we talked about it last week, I think, or the week before. I would put it also into the hopeful category, but it is my multiplayer pick. It is a multiplayer game I'm guaranteed to play when it drops sometime this year. I can't wait. You know, I had so much fun with Helldivers 1. Yes, it was hard. That was part of the enjoying it, was getting your teeth kicked in. I'm excited to do that on PlayStation 5. I'm excited for the new perspective and, like, you know, obviously the more HD art of it all. I hope it doesn't lose that charm that it had. That'd be my one thing. I do think the trailer that you're watching here, if you're watching or if you just remember it from the PlayStation Showcase, did seem a bit generic, I felt. I didn't feel like the, you know, Helldivers cuteness was really bleeding through in terms of what they were doing and how they did before of getting crushed by your own pods and yada, yada, yada. But again, it's the debut thing. They're using a lot of different camera angles, trying to show you a lot of different stuff. I'm hoping whenever we get from Arrowhead or from PlayStation, when we get gameplay, it'll be like, okay, cool. No, this is Helldivers. This still very much looks like and plays like what I want it to play like. But I'm stoked. I'm interested. I'm excited to play it.
Hell yeah.
Janet, round us out. This is the 15th game, the final game enshrined in our list.
Hot Wheels Unleashed 2. Oh! One to two people. It is barely a multiplayer game. And I think it's online only for the multiplayer, which I still kind of wish they had a local option. I love local co-op. But yeah, Hot Wheels Unleashed, you know, Blessing, funnily enough, touched on this at the beginning, or like towards the beginning of the episode, of Hot Wheels Unleashed, the first one, kind of being like a sleeper hit where a lot of us heard about it and were like, I mean, is it going to be good? And then it kind of was, but also I think it had a lot of room for growth. For me, like playing a bit of Hot Wheels Unleashed, the look and the feel of it was absolutely phenomenal. I mainly took issue with the difficulty scaling. Like, I felt like the normal mode was a little too hard, but the easy was a little too easy, where it kind of lost like that edge. I'm like, I need a schmedium mode, right? Like something a little bit in between. So whether they have like additional options or it's just balanced a little bit differently, I could see myself really getting into this. I know they had a couple issues too with, was it like sort of how they presented like the DLC woven in with the like the paid stuff versus the stuff you paid for. I know some people took issue with like, oh, I paid this much, but then there's still extra stuff to buy. You know, I think they're was a bit of room for growth in that. Like a lot of the Hot Wheels Unleashed 1 recommendations did have to come with a couple caveats to them, I feel like. And I'm hoping Hot Wheels Unleashed 2 will sort of do away with some of those aspects and really just be a better version of the first one. I also feel like this is coming pretty quick off the first one. Like,
I agree,
when was
the first
one?
Yeah.
Time kind of melts together though, and then the pandemic, and like, I don't know what time is anymore. But it feels pretty quick afterwards. But I'm like, yeah, sure, they're supporting this. It could end up being like a really neat franchise. So yeah, this October, or is it this October? Yeah, this October.
Yeah.
Hot Wheels Unleashed 2.
What if I told you that I got to play Hot Wheels Unleashed 2 at Summer Game Fest and I can talk
Damn.
About it?
Damn! You're talk just about playing it all the fucking scoops, man. Yeah, go for it.
As of 2 days ago, I can talk about it.
Nice.
And I thought it was
helpful because they hit me up and they're like, hey.
Yeah, I literally looked at my email.
Are they going to talk about the game? And I was like, I don't remember. You should have. This is a long out embargo. You should have given us a closer embargo.
I hate when they have those like, oh, remember this for, especially when you do a podcast. Like, at least when you write an article, like, you just schedule it later,
right.
But I'm like, oh, remember this thing from 8 weeks ago? But go ahead, how was it?
Oh, it was cool. Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I think the thing that stuck out to me the most was there's now more variety of the types of vehicles, where there's a motorcycle now that you can drive with, and it was fun to mess around with different options there. There's a lot more customization. There's like a skill tree system that you can go in and actually customize and switch up how things control, how things play there. There's like a shift mechanic now where if you press a button, you can kind of shift left and right, and it feels like they're trying to play up the mobility of it as well. Reminds me again of something like Rocket League and how those cars control. And from what we got out of playing Hot Wheels Unleashed 1, so many of those tracks are just straight up obstacle courses. And so I love having more mobility options there to like let you you know, create different ways for people to solve different obstacles and hop over to a different platform that they're trying to get to. So I like that stuff as well. And then one of the things that I really enjoyed that I don't know was in the last one, but like there was a mode that was just an open track where you are just hitting different checkpoints in, like, by taking any route in an order set, and like it was just like a big old area that you're driving around. I'm like, I played that game at launch, and so I don't know what they added after in the first one. But that was something I played, and I was like, oh, this is pretty neat. Like, this is a different way to play this game. So
I played that game a lot. I don't really remember what you're describing.
Yeah. The pandemic flattens everything. I remember us doing streams of this and having a great time. When did the first one come out?
It must have been 2021.
Yeah, that's my guess. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. One of the things I still have questions on, too, is... For this one, they talked about having a story with, like, characters and stuff.
Oh, interesting.
And I didn't see any of that in the preview. Like, none of that stuff was there. But it's the thing that I have the most questions about.
I hope it's just a kid. Like, you know, the story is the kid playing with the cars and putting them down or whatever.
I mean, yeah, like, the first one had, like, a solo campaign. But there wasn't really any, like, story or anything. It was just, like, you had a bunch of different races to go do. So if they're adding some, like, cute filler in between... Yeah, essential structure, like, that's cool. What
I mean, here on the website, they say, in a new story-driven campaign mode, you'll race alongside a team of original characters on an epic adventure to save the city from destruction. What does that mean? for what?
Maybe it's, wait.
Go for it.
I think, okay, so you're a little, like, racing person, and you're in the Hot Wheels, and saving the city from destruction is maybe, like, showing how fun the tracks are when, like, someone's packing up, like a parent or a kid's packing the stuff away, and it's it's still fun to like play with your Hot Wheels. What I would love from Hot Wheels, like the world of Hot Wheels Unleashed, would be if they did a crossover with Lego, because for me as a kid, like I was a big Hot Wheels fan growing up. My brother had a bunch of them. He had like the little cases with like the cars, and we had like all these different Hot Wheels. Like he had like the like Sammy Sosa's car as a Hot Wheel and stuff like that. And we used to put little Lego people on them, and we'd get a rubber band as a seatbelt and put them in there. Actually, I saw one of the cars. Boom! The shelf's back, baby. I got this is actually the car that. Don't at me. It's not a Hot Wheel. You know, we were like, way faster than what Hot Wheels are, right? We had real Hot Wheels, and then this thing. Maybe this is a Hot Wheel. I don't know what this is. This is a little blue car. And we would drive around with this, and it's like all broken and busted. And one time we threw it into the wall, and it put like two little dents there.
Oh, no.
But anyway, we had like the Lego people in there, and we like named little teams. And like I had the team of Lego people, and I named them the Lego Islanders. And my brother had Hematology Racing Company, and it was like, you know, those erasers that are little like characters. It's like, oh, he's a tiny snowman.
A pig? Okay.
Yeah. He had like a few of those. He had like two erasers that were snowmen, or at least one of them. And then he had like a little elephant named Emmett, and that's why it's Hematology. He ran the racing company, and we would like do these races. So anyway, that's not gonna happen in their game because they don't have the license to use Lego people. But anything that plays on, I think, the toy aspect and like what a kid would do would be cool for the story. But yeah. So let me write Hot Wheels Unleashed 3. We got all the material we need.
Crushed it.
Yeah.
Lego people and rubber bands. You got a story.
Mm-hmm.
My thing with the story, too, is like, because you mentioned like characters, whatever. The I don't think there's people in the cars, right? Because it's just the Hot Wheels
like,
cars.
Like canonically Hot Wheels? Like, no, but there'd have to be. Or like,
like, in Hot Wheels Unleashed 1, when we're racing, if you like turn the camera, there's nobody sitting in those cars. Like when you're playing as a motorcycle, a motorcycle.
Why, it's the kid. I like the kid. The kid.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's the kid.
That's kind of neat. I like that.
The kid racing against like neighbors or something.
There you go.
But then how are you saving the world is the thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're happy to give you PS I Love You XOXO's 15 most anticipated PS5 games for the rest of 2023. The list goes Thirsty Suitors, The Plucky Squire, Cocoon, Spider-Man 2, Stellar Blade, Viewfinder, Alan Wake 2, Lies of P, Oxenfree 2 Lost Signals, Ghostbusters Rise of the Ghost Lord, Wildcard Football, Goodbye Volcano High, Helldivers 2, Exoprimal, and Hot Wheels Unleashed 2. Barrett is making 15 trophies as we speak to send to those developers.
They're done. Wherever.
Oh, they're done already.
Wow. Oh, they're ready
now. Wow. That's fast. Blessing.
Yep.
What happened this week in PlayStation?
We just got the PlayStation Plus Essentials for the next month. We're getting Call of Duty, Black Ops, Cold War, Alan Wake Remastered, and Endling Extinction is Forever. Greg, are you finally going to play Alan Wake Remastered?
Finally. Am I going to try for the fourth time or whatever to do Alan Wake? No, there's too much happening right now. There are too many games stacked up. I'll just jump into Alan Wake 2 and be fine. My main thing I wanted to do is try to do the AWE expansion from or AWE from Control, the DLC that came out. Yeah. I'd like to try to set aside time to do that, but I think my Control save, what was it? That was one that you came over and you got the trophy just for turning. No, I don't think it did. I think I gotta maybe do it all again on PS5.
Control remaster. Because isn't that a different SKU?
Yeah. It's a remaster. I think that's what they did, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, not a remaster. It was just the PS5 version.
Was it not Control. Called the Control Remastered? I thought that was a whole thing.
I said Control Remastered. Because
remember, like, people were mad that you couldn't get it automatically.
Control PS5. Well, I remember they didn't call it Remaster, though, did they?
I mean,
Ultimate Edition. Ultimate Edition.
That's what it is. You're right.
All right, fine. So, no, anyway.
Be in the middle. Jana, you going to play Endling Extinction is Forever?
I don't. What is that? I'll be honest. I might.
You know, like, okay, here's the thing. Because I'm pretty sure I've heard of this game. And I'm going to try to recount it from memory. And
oh, Barrett, okay. So here's the thing. Okay. Wait, no, go ahead. Do your recount, because I want to hear your recount. What I think it is,
unless I just have this mistaken for something else, it's a 2D game where there's animals, but it's like very highly stylized, and there's like a little white fox that's like really bright, and you're... Let's say it's a snowy area you're playing.
You're thinking of that other game. So here's... Okay.
Damn it.
I've been holding on to this for, like, a long time, and I've discussed it privately. I think it's my first time talking about this on content. And I'm not saying this game is bad, because I don't know what this game is. Endling Extinction is Forever, and I'm also not sure, like, is that a new game? Is that, like, a continuation? Is it, like, the console edition?
I'm pretty sure it's old.
But here's the thing. I'm tired of y'all. We got enough Fox games. That little Fox running left to right, we got enough.
Wait.
Okay, I'm getting low to high on the eShop all day, every day. And I've seen like 8 different ones. And I'll be honest, a lot of them don't hit. I hate to say it.
Oh no, I accidentally muted Janet. Oh no.
Oh, get out of here, Barrett. No.
Is Barrett a like
pro
foxes?
Fox agenda?
I didn't know Bear was a fox guy.
They're cute. What the fuck? Why do we have to constantly pick battles against things that are just out here existing?
Barrett loves Tunic. Barrett loves the fox and Ghost of Tsushima. And Barrett loves Fox News.
You heard it here first.
All right.
You heard it here first.
Tunic, I don't have a problem with Tunic because it's a game with a fox, but it's not a fox game.
Okay, we can't do that.
If you're hitting low to high on the eShop, you know exactly
what makes a fox in the fox game about. Then?
Because it's like you play as the fox, but the fox is very like animal style. Like
it's
Tunic
just doing
is like an
fox
anthropomorphic
shit blessing, not solving puzzles like cool foxes.
Tunic is more anthropomorphic, so that's why he's like fine.
Still,
you know, he has his own problems. He's got his own separate problems. But yeah, you're thinking, because like Blessing, I know a game you're thinking of, and I can't fucking remember the
name. But no, I think I'm conflating two things, because I was really close with Endling Extinction is Forever. I think the things that I got off was like it being a white fox. It's not a white fox.
Yeah, but there is a game that has a white glowing fox.
What was your problem with a white fox?
I think I was thinking of Never Alone.
No. That's a different game. That's a game with like an arc, like a girl in Alaska.
Are you thinking of Blanc?
She also has a fox.
She also says she has a fox. Solid, but is that a fox game?
You play as her. That one's not a fox game. That's like a companion game. Means there's a chance saying Blanc. It's not Blanc. Blanc is totally black and white. So I don't think he's thinking of Blanc.
Well, no, I said black and white before though.
Oh, was it? So yeah. Is it Blanc?
Like, so I might have been
that was
like
the game that Tim reviewed like earlier.
Right. There are too many fox games actually. Now that we're listing these things out.
Well, because here's the thing. Because a lot of them don't hit in Blanc. You know, and Means, I don't know if you played Blanc. I haven't gotten around to Blanc yet. I have it. I just haven't gotten around to it. That did not hit. Spirit of the North. That's what I think Blessing is thinking of. Is not good. I'm sorry to say it. Spirit of the North did not hit. Isaiah downloaded it, and I was like 2 seconds in. It was just dead in the water. And then I played another one at PAX that also wasn't good. And I'm like, this looks like Spirit of the North. And it played like Spirit of the North, and Spirit of the North wasn't good, and that game wasn't good. And I knew that game wasn't good immediately, and I was just sitting there. it was no 3 hours with ExoPrimal, which turned out to be good. But it was, yeah, it's a whole thing.
I think I combined all the Fox games into one game, because, yeah, I'm looking at Spirit of the North.
Because
I think I was thinking of
the
black and white
same.
Of Blanc, but like the snowy area of Spirit of the North, but then also the art style of Endling Extinctions Forever. I was just molding them all into one.
So many of them, like, just don't end up hitting, you know? Like, I think it's time to just, like... Anyway, am I going to play this? Honestly, maybe. Maybe. Because here's the thing, and that's the thing, like, I know when this shit doesn't hit, because I'm in it every day, all day, every day. Like, it's like me with these narrative games. Like, I'm not trying to be rude. Like, I like the genre, but a lot of these things are not coming to fruition. So I got bad vibes from Endling. Maybe I'll check it out just so I can report back and let you know If this is like a four fox game or a two fox game or whatever the fox it is, you know.
Five foxes. What I appreciate about you, Janet, is that when you answer a question, you answer the fuck out of that question. Because I was expecting a no, and that's it.
It triggered a lot of memories for me. Because I've been buying these games left and right.
That turned into a whole exploration on what is a fox game. Look, exactly.
If you're hitting load a hat on the eShop, you know what the fuck I'm talking about, okay? I know this is Blizzard Podcast. I'm out there in the fucking Fox community, and I'm telling you, a lot of these games do not hit. Maybe Endling will be different. I don't know.
Now it's time for PlayStation Picks. We're going to talk about what's come out this week and what we picked to play on PlayStation.
There's a fucking Fox game that came out this week.
What came out this week? Destroy All Humans 2, Reprobed, single player for PS4, Story of Seasons, A Wonderful Life for PS5, AEW Fight Forever for PS5 and PS4, Dead Cells for PS5, Ghost Trick Fan Detective for PS4, and then Goodbye World for PS4 and PS5. Greg, what'd you pick to play on PlayStation?
Well, of course, I reviewed AEW Fight Forever. You can go get that as a Kind of Funny Gamescast review right now on podcast services and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. But yesterday, knowing that PS I Love You was upon us, I said, you know what I should do? First off, just double check the old embargo.
Make sure you can talk about this.
Oh, God.
What time is it? I was like, it's one of those things you put on the schedule and you forget about. You're like, I should double check that. Yesterday, knowing we were having this show today and that the embargo would be lifted, I played Synapse. I dusted off the PSVR 2. I tossed on the headset and I played Synapse. Of course, this is one people have been looking forward to that PlayStation has been putting into its things. It's from End Dreams. I'm sure Baird will have a thing up here in a second. It is the roguelike, right? So the idea here is this is the game.
I really want to play this one.
This is the one where Jennifer Hale and David Hayter are here giving you the voices. It is a little bit of Inception. It's sci-fi. Hmm. You are going into David Hayter's mind, right, to try to get the information you need to stop a terrorist attack. And so as you see, this is pretty much the opening of the game. You come in here, you put your hand down, and you're into his world as you go through and try to do this. As you go in and kill all the Mind Guardian Palace people, or whatever you want to call them, you know, you're earning currency, or you're getting all this different stuff. There's objectives for you to do that when you come out, you can augment your run, obviously, of, okay, cool, I'm going to get this or do that. And I put, you know, a machine gun or a shotgun into the store that's inside of the level, right? Because like a roguelike, you always start with your pistol, you go through and kill these people, and then you go through and be able to unlock stuff. What you always start with, though, is a pistol and telekinesis, as you see here in the trailer, and you have to throw people around and do stuff with it. The trailers have always looked good, bonkers to a degree. Playing it, it is the first time in a long time I got kind of car sick. Got motion sick playing a VR game. I'm not prone to VR motion sick, but I was playing yesterday and did stop at one point where I was like, I could keep going, but I finished my run and I was done there. My thought process on it, and I know that I sound like a broken record and I'm sad about that, it is, for me, still the Dave and Buster's experience, where it was like, cool, it was enjoyable. I don't love the pistol, which of course is your starting weapon. I just don't feel like it handles the way I want a pistol to handle. And there's so many, again, this is fucking VR. How many games have we wielded a pistol in that, and it feels really great? I didn't get that vibe here. I did feel better with the Uzi. But all that said, it was fun. I enjoyed playing it. I think if I hadn't gotten sick, I would have played it longer, but I don't think it's something that I would be aching to return to. As you ran through and saw a bunch of cool stuff, like, I'm sure there will be more diversity in terms of types of enemies, but they all are these guys with these white masks on their face coming at you or whatever, shooting around at you. As I went deeper into mine, you went from just having guys who shot back at you to then having these guys that would run up and explode on you. But even looking through a trailer there showing what you got, you don't see a giant discrepancy in different types of enemies or a variety, right? And so it's a weird one. It's got a bunch of cool ideas. If you are a VR person, if you have PlayStation VR 2, it's probably going to be something you want to try. You want to get in there and go for. But for me, like, it didn't blow my hair back, sadly. I do think it does a lot right. The telekinesis is cool. I would need more time and not getting sick to get better at it, because it is this idea that you can pick stuff up and move it. Certain things there you can crush. So you can like get the barrels that you can either shoot to blow up and grab them and move them and crush them to blow up parts of the wall or take out enemies or drop stuff on them. I thought it was, you know, I was doing better when I was just running and attacking people, like kind of like staying in motion. You can take cover, but I kind of found that clunky. It wasn't the normal cover mechanics you've seen before. Overall, it's another one that I think is interesting to play and get into, but it's not like a must play for me personally, but it might be for you if you're a person who is aching for more PlayStation VR 2 content and thinks it looks great off of that. It also has this really cool idea of, you know, you have telekinesis on your left hand, but if you turn over palm up, it basically puts like an echo puck in your hand that shows you a radar and then has your health on it and the number of enemies remaining in the level. But it is that thing too of just like, you know, when you flip it over and it's like, you have 27 people left in this level. Okay. Well, shoot. They keep respawning. Like, how many more? Okay, whatever.
Are you stuck with a pistol for a while? Because that's the thing for me with roguelike games, where I think the better ones give you something new and pretty soon into your run, right? Because like the base weapon is always whatever the most basic thing is.
Yeah.
Let's put something in their hand within the first 2 minutes of playing so that they feel like they're already on the track of upgrade.
It's your second run. When you come out of that first run, I think you have, I'm probably speaking a little out of turn, but how I played, I had enough currency to then go to the upgrade. There's like two different things over there. There's this thing that are challenges. So it's like, you know, drop a box on 10 people's head and kill them that way, which will give you a skill point. Then you can take those skill points or whatever and come to the thing and buy into, okay, I want to make sure that there's always there could be a machine gun at the weapon altars. Mm. And the weapon altars are plentiful in each area. Like, not plentiful. I guess they're there, but they're not like hidden. Like I never felt like I played, like, oh, I finished this level and I never saw an altar. Like, you always see them along the way.
For me, regarding PlayStation picks, speaking of roguelites, I've been back addicted to Inscription.
You get away.
So much so that, you know, I played the game originally on PC, beat it on Steam Deck. I almost bought it again on PlayStation 5 for the trophies in particular, because I looked at it and I was like, I could do a full playthrough again, because I just love playing this game. Like, once you beat it, you then unlock a mode that is purely just the roguelite card game, and you're going through and you're trying to see like what different challenges you can make for yourself. And so it's okay, here I'm going to start off with one less point to start off around, right? Or if I turn this thing on, then I don't get to do rerolls when it comes to picking a random card and stuff like that. But if you're somehow, you know, if you somehow miss Inscription, really fun roguelike card game that also has this fun escape room sort of gameplay to it, and the game evolves and has twists and turns and stuff that really blew my mind my first way through. It's on PlayStation. But man, I've just been back addicted to it, and it's been such a reminder of how good the pure gameplay loop is of the card game. And it's been fun, because one of the reasons why I picked it back up again, I've been talking with my friend Sarah for really like the last half year, right? But like especially recently, about, you know, wanting to maybe make a card game, because like she's an artist. Yeah. I've been into card games in forever, right? But I think especially within the last couple of years. And I've been like going through the list of card games I really, really like. And so Inscription was one that was on the list, picked it up, and immediately was like, man, this might be one of my favorite games ever. Like, it is.
That's awesome.
It is like nonstop fun, right? I never get bored of playing it. It becomes a problem because I can just be in bed playing it on my Steam Deck and just not want to stop. I just want to keep going. But I've been back addicted to that. And then also I've been addicted to Street Fighter VI as well.
As one does.
So I've been doing the ranks on that. I've gotten my Luke, who's my main character, up to gold rank, which is nice because, like, you know, relatively, I'd say that's probably about middle, maybe upper middle, I don't know, but because Final Fantasy 16 has taken over so much in my June, I felt like I've been running behind and not been able to focus on rank whatsoever, and so it's been nice to finally get back and then focus in on, all right, let's try and rank up this character as much as I can, and so when I hit gold, it felt like an achievement, and so now I'm like, cool, now it's on to the next one, let's see if I can get to diamond, and then also get my Kimberly up in gold as well, and so it's been fun to do that. That game continues to be fun. There was a little bit there where the servers were taking a hit. I don't know why, but it seems like they fixed it,
okay,
which is good news for me. But yeah, dude, Street Fighter VI continues to be a very fun time.
Radical.
Heights.
Janet, you've had no time to play anything because you've been moving, correct?
No, I still got nothing. Next week, though, for sure.
Right.
I'm going to have something. Really quick, though, I did want to ask Blessing a question. So I played Inscription when it came out, and I liked it. But I felt like I wasn't good enough at it. And admittedly, I kind of gave up sort of early. Like, I didn't really try that hard. I was kind of like, I'm not making it, whatever. And I just kind of bounced off. I've gotten more used to, you know, I guess thinky games, in the sense that I've started playing like board games and card games and getting more used to like learning rules there and coming up with strategies and all that. Like, you know, real life board games and card games. What would you say are good entry point games to like the card game video game genre? Is Inscription a good entry point? Because the only card game that's a video game that I've enjoyed at all was Signs of the Sojourner, which I might be butchering the pronunciation a little bit, But that's like, no offense to that game, it's kind of barely a card game. Like, I mean, it is a card game, but it, like, the cards are not, like, they're just symbols. Like, they're very simple, and that's the only one I've liked and enjoyed. So, like, what would you say is a good entry? Because that's not really, like, as deep strategy, no offense to it. It's a great game, but,
I'll give three suggestions. Sure. Inscription is one of the suggestions. I was with you my first time when I played Inscription, because I played it that fall that it came out, and I only played about a few hours, and I fell off of it, I think for the same exact reason. But then I went back to it, and I think it's the fact that Inscription is so much more than just a card game that brought me in, because it is an escape room. It is you, like, or, yeah, like, it is you looking around the room, figuring out how to solve these puzzles, and there's so much there to the narrative and the other gameplay elements that, you know, I think there's so much there to enjoy, even if you're not just a card game person, and then naturally just get addicted to the card game. So yeah, Inscription would be there. I would say you should go back to it. Slay the Spire, I'd also say, is one that's up there. That is one that was free on PS Plus, although I don't know if you would have acquired it on PS Plus.
Ooh,
just knowing who
question.
You are,
I'll let you know.
So
I'll
you might have it. You might have it. You might not have it. But that Slay the Spire is probably the roguelike card game that I hear most people talk about as, like, this is the one. The year that came out, like, people, there are so many people I knew that were hailing that as one of their games of the year that year. Super approachable. And, like, the thing that these games have in common is there's so much about deck building as well for each of the runs, which that is half the fun, you know, trying to figure out which cards play well together, forming a strategy that feels like your own. I think Slay the Spire and Inscription are fun for that. And then another one I'll recommend is Monster Train. I've not played as much Monster Train, but one of my friends recommended it to me, and from the little bit I played, has a lot in common with Slay the Spire, just but with, like, a different slant for the gameplay, where you are, like, you are basically on these trains, or you're taking out multiple, or you're fighting against, like, these rounds of enemies that are coming in on, like, multiple floors. And so it's almost like strategy and management and a card game at the same time, which is pretty fun. And from what I played of that one run, it seemed very approachable. Like, I already got what was going on through my first run. And so those would be the three, but I would say even start with either Slay the Spire and Inscription, and then maybe move on to Monster Train.
Thanks.
Oh, and then Marvel Snap, MadogNick96 says in chat. That's a good one.
It was a good one. But it's not on PlayStation. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been your PlayStation podcast. Yes, I love you. XOXO.
As their problem.
Thank you for consuming, watching, hanging out, listening, viewing, subscribing, liking, sharing, leaving a review, leaving stars on Spotify, and everything else you do for us. Please consider going to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Of course, just a couple bucks keeps the mics and lights on and gets you a bunch of exclusive cool content and stuff. For now, though, we bid you adieu. We'll be back next week with more PlayStation news you need to know about. But until then, it's been our pleasure to serve you.